serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine here on WYLL. Let's take a look at your Champaign-Urbana news for the rest of today. Mostly cloudy with some scattered showers and thunderstorms and a high of 78 expected. We're seeing a 40% chance of precipitation. Tonight, mostly cloudy with some scattered showers and a low of 55, about a 30% chance of rain tonight. Tomorrow, we're going to see possibly some scattered showers, about a 20% chance of rain and a high of 72, and then not much of a chance of rain by Friday night. It should be partly cloudy with a low of 51. Looking ahead to the weekend, mostly sunny with a high of 76 on Saturday. We should expect some light north winds. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of 59, and then by Sunday, we're seeing a 50% chance of rain again, mostly cloudy with a high of 77 and a low in the mid-60s. Let's take a look at some temperatures around the state this particular hour. In Chicago at O'Hare Airport, there's light rain at the moment, and it's 56 degrees. In Lansing, light rain and 57 right now. Looking towards central Illinois, in Bloomington, mostly sunny at 71. It's sunny in Decatur and 75. Peoria, partly sunny and only 67 degrees this hour. In Springfield, mostly sunny and 74. It's 78 degrees at Willard Airport in Champaign right now, and 77 outside of our studios here at Friends Plaza in Urbana.
Support for WILL comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the standard all-wheel drive Subaru Outback with an EPA highway rating of 29 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at their showroom on Route 45 in Savoy or at SubaruofChampaign.com.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine here on WYLL AM 580. I'm Chris Berube. Individual state constitutions across the nation spell out a host of guaranteed rights, like same-sex marriage or collective bargaining, but what about the right to farm? Recently, we've seen legislation in Missouri regarding the issue. Well, now Harvest Public Media's Bill Wheelhouse reports what's behind the new drive to establish that guarantee in other parts of the Midwest.
Some farmers are feeling a bit defensive or put upon these days. Take the recent experiences of Bob Young, for instance. The 69-year-old raises 3,600 hogs on the land where he grew up near Rochester in central Illinois. When he was getting ready to build the hog confinement facility 6 years ago, some area residents concerned about the potential smell of the place filed suit. A court order stopped construction for 18 months.
A couple years there, that our house was in foreclosure about every month. I just couldn't make house payment and keep up with everything else.
And its impact went beyond Young's pocketbook.
The wife actually took it a lot worse than I did. She ended up in the hospital with hypertension and high blood pressure.
While that lawsuit ultimately fizzled, skirmishes like this are coming up with regularity across the country. And that's got agribusiness groups moving from defense to offense. The latest tactic involves passing constitutional amendments in individual states that would secure a right to farm.
We've noticed an uptick in attacks on agriculture, both culturally and politically.
Dan Kleinsorge leads an organization called Missouri Farmers Care. It's a mix of 40 groups, including the Farm Bureau and Monsanto. They've successfully lobbied to get state lawmakers in Missouri to put an amendment on the ballot in 2014.
The highest law in the state is the state constitution, so what we are really looking for is a right in that state constitution to protect farming.
Kleinsorge says it's about more than lawsuits. He points to, quote, attacks by animal welfare groups such as the Humane Society of the United States to put more regulations on livestock farming. Also of concern, opponents of genetically modified foods are making inroads with state laws and state ballot initiatives that would require the labeling of food.
You know, I want people to understand that this is something where agriculture kind of feels like it's been targeted by certain special interest groups to have a great deal of money.
Right to farm might seem like a strange notion. After all, we don't see banks or big box stores getting such protections. And there are already laws on the books in all 50 states to protect farmers from nuisance lawsuits. Farm groups, however, say most people are now at least two generations removed from farm life, and they don't always realize food production has changed or that the farming way of life they knew even a short time ago is dramatically different. They say that makes the public more willing to regulate farming, but the Humane Society sees it another way.
There's this trend because industrialized ag, oftentimes supported by the Farm Bureau, is really pushing to be able to not have to have any restrictions, environmental restrictions or any restrictions on how animals are raised or how farmers are treated.
That's Joe Maxwell, a vice president with the Humane Society. Maxwell, a farmer himself and former Missouri lieutenant governor, says constitutional protection would allow farmers to escape regulation.
They want to just be able to freewheel out there and do whatever they want and abuse whatever they want.
North Dakota voters approved the first right-to-farm constitutional amendment in the nation last fall. And right behind the ballot initiative in Missouri, Indiana, and Iowa look to be the next in line. The amendments differ a bit in their wording, but the general thrust is that the right to engage in farming practices shall not be infringed. University of Missouri political scientist Peveril Squire is an expert on state constitutions. He says there is still a question of what that means.
It could be essentially meaningless. That is, it'd be more a symbolic gesture than a sort of binding constitutional principle. There's nothing in this relatively few words that would give much guidance to legal authorities as they try to sort out all of this.
In Illinois, there is currently no drive for a right-to-farm amendment to the state constitution. However, back on his farm, Bob Young says he could support the idea, although Young suggests that maybe people shouldn't be so quick to move out of town into the idyllic countryside.
As far as city people moving out, most of them are fine. But there are a few that they come out here and think we got to change everything so we can make it city living, and that won't work.
In North Dakota, the amendment easily passed and little money was spent on the campaign. The battle in Missouri may be more expensive. The last time farm groups and the Humane Society squared off in that state, they had a combined war chest of $10 million. Bill Wheelhouse, Harvest Public Media.
This is WYLL. Well, right now, President Obama is traveling across the country on something he's calling the Middle Class Jobs and Opportunity Tour, and he's swinging through Mooresville, North Carolina today. He's going to highlight learning. Young voters have cited the economy and education as their top concerns. But as NPR's Mara Liason reports, neither political party has been very good at addressing these issues, and young people are becoming skeptical.
It's not easy being a young person in today's economy. The unemployment rate for college graduates is over 25%, and for high school graduates, it's even worse. Peter Levine is the director of CIRCLE, a nonpartisan research center that studies young people as citizens.
About half of young people go to college today, and about half do not. And actually, only about a quarter really make it through to a four-year degree. And even that group is having a lot of trouble getting jobs, or at least getting the jobs they expected to get.
Not surprisingly, more young people are postponing marriage, family, and home ownership, the kinds of commitments that historically have characterized voters open to the Republican message. And, says Peter Levine, recently, young voters have been voting for Democrats.
Democrats have the upper hand. They won the youth vote in the last two presidential elections, and young people seem basically supportive of them.
This week, the College Republican National Committee took the first step toward changing that by taking a survey of voters under 30 to find out why they don't vote Republican. CRNC Chair Alex Smith announced the report on the group's website.
As the leader of over 250,000 college Republicans, I'm committed to showing my peers and younger voters just what the Republican Party has to offer.
One task for Republicans is changing the tone on issues like gay marriage, contraception, and immigration. But Kirsten Solis Anderson, the Republican pollster who conducted the survey, found something else that surprised her.
The conventional wisdom is that it's social issues that are standing in the way. Our research actually found that's not necessarily the case. The real problem is the economy. There's a sense that Republicans aren't necessarily the party that is going to help you move up the ladder, but that they're the party that's going to be great for you once you make it to the top of the ladder. And for many young voters who are just starting off in life, they have a lot of student loan debt, they're struggling to get a job because youth unemployment is so high, they're wondering what the Republican Party's solutions are to those problems.
But while the Republican Party regroups and struggles to come up with an agenda to meet these concerns, the Democrats are busy pressing their advantage. This week, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee began running ads aimed at young voters with student debt. Emily Bittner is a spokesperson for the DCCC.
We wanted to talk to students directly, and so we reached out to newspapers that are still publishing over the summer on college campuses and published print and online ads asking why their congressmen want students to pay more, which is a consequence of what House Republicans would do when it comes to student loans.
The irony here is that President Obama, while he has an agenda aimed at young people's needs, the student loan rate cap, investments in education, a hike in the minimum wage, hasn't been able to pass it. But what Anderson found in the GOP survey is that young voters tend to give the president the benefit of the doubt.
The number one word that came up in our responses was the word trying. They felt like he was putting up some sort of an effort. It's a relatively low bar for Republicans to overcome, but they do need to have that agenda that is focused on sort of day-to-day pocketbook issues that matter to young people in order for them to begin winning a greater share of the youth vote.
If they don't, says Anderson, the GOP will cease to be a viable party in the future.
Once you've voted for a party a couple of times, it becomes habit-forming. And when you go to the ballot box for the rest of your life, you'll be slightly more inclined to repeat that behavior and cast a ballot for that same party. It's a massive issue because it's not just about the elections in the next 2 to 4 years. It's about the sustainability of the Republican Party long-term over the next few decades.
It's an existential problem for the GOP, but Peter Levine thinks Republicans have an opening because young people, despite their pro-democratic bias, are ambivalent about the basic premise of the Obama presidency, that the federal government can help improve their lives.
They're quite uncertain and trying to figure out how to interpret the last 5 years. Was it 5 years of recovery, or was it 5 years of sputtering, insufficient recovery? So it's debatable, and I think they're having the debate.
In the upcoming election cycles, young voters will have that debate without Barack Obama at the top of the ticket. And that might help level the playing field a bit for Republicans, if they can come up with policies that speak to young voters' economic concerns. Mara Liasson, NPR News, The White House.
Support comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. This Saturday, June 8th, the Corkscrew will hold their weekly wine tasting from 3 to 6 p.m., followed by live music in the Bouvon Wine Bar from 6:30 to 8:30 with Eric Lund and the Jazz Friends Quintet, and 9 to 11 with Morgan Orion. Details on the Corkscrew's Facebook page.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, June 6, 2013. It's the birthday of poet Maxine Cumin, born in Philadelphia, 1925. Grew up in an affluent family. Her father owned the largest pawnbroking business in the city. Even though she was Jewish, her parents sent her to a Catholic school because it was so close to her house. She said, "Jesus entered my life casually, but insistently, and some of that sanctified passion has stayed in my bones." She wrote poetry in secret from the time she was a child, and when she was a student at Radcliffe, she finally got the courage up to show her poems to a professor. He handed them back with the comment, "Say it with flowers, but for God's sake, don't try to write poems." And she didn't for a time, until she got serious about it again in her 30s, in the middle of her third pregnancy. She said, "The grit of discontent, the acute misery of early and uninformed motherhood worked under my skin to force out the writer." Cumin is now the author of many poetry collections, including Upcountry, which won the Pulitzer Prize for poetry. On this date in 1949, George Orwell's 1984 was published. 1984 begins with the famous line, "It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. Orwell wrote most of the novel on the island of Jura in the Scottish Hebrides, grieving the loss of his wife and overwhelmed with the demands on his time that arose from the success of Animal Farm. The weather was terrible. He stayed indoors and wrote. He kept on with the book even as he became more and more ill with tuberculosis, and he died in 1950, less than a year after the book was published. George Orwell, who said, "On the whole, human beings want to be good, but not too good, and not quite all the time." It's the birthday of the father of modern Russian literature, Alexander Pushkin, born in Moscow in 1799, died at the age of 38, but in his brief life, he worked in nearly every literary form. His masterpiece was the verse novel Eugene Onegin, about a man who kills his friend in a duel and loses the woman he loves. Pushkin married a woman who was described at the time as the most beautiful woman in Russia. She had many admirers, including Tsar Nicholas. One of her suitors was so persistent that Pushkin finally challenged him to a pistol duel in 1837. Pushkin died 2 days later. And here's a poem by Maxine Cumin entitled Watering Trough. Let the end of all bathtubs be this putting out to pasture of four Victorian bow legs anchored in grasses. Let all long-necked browsers come drink from the shallows while faucets grow rusty and porcelain yellows. Where once our nude forebears soaped up in this vessel, come, cows, and come, horses. Bring burdock and thistle. Come slaver the scum of timothy and clover.